morning, everyone. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and welcome to the show. Today, it is almost the end of April, and there are a lot of storms in the air, a lot of energy brewing, and a whole lot of things flying around and coming down from the heavens. So we're going to have this show today with Dr. Trish, but also just to remind you, if at any time this show abruptly ends, that means either Dr. Trish or myself is in the middle of a tornado warning. So we just wanted to clear that up at the beginning of the show and just to let you know that if you are in a tornado area, please be safe and also go out and also help to look for those animals that are out running around after a tornado. They're just as shaken as you are. So today, my guest is Dr. Trish Working. She's the author of the book, The Fur Agreements, which is Lessons in Consciousness from Animals. Okay, so what that means is if you have pets, they're here for a purpose. They're not just an animal that you can dress up and put on a little leash, people. Okay? But they also have so much intelligence. They have so much compassion to give, and they just share with an abundance of love. But then there are also those pets that don't. So let's talk about that today. Your pets, how we interact with them, and what they are actually trying to teach us, or maybe what we can help share with them. So Dr. Trish, thank you for being on the show today. I know you're in that nice, unstable air today, too, as well.
Absolutely, and thank you for being here. And I just send out a prayer automatically for everybody listening and everybody around us to be safe and their beloved pets as well.
You know, I was wondering, you know, I always talked about pets, you know, and it's kind of unique for me to have you on the show because I'm not connected to pets. But when I read your book, it's all about just connecting to humanity. That's what my thought is because if you think we live in this little glass cage of just people and pets are over there in that glass cage and, you know, and then the animals over there, everybody thinks everything is so separate when really it's such a system that has to work together in humanity in the world. That when things start to shake out, we really need each other, right?
That's absolutely true. And in fact, I honestly think of it as a brotherhood and that really, like you said, we can't do anything alone and that the animals are truly the gateway to help us find our humanity, to fulfill it, or sometimes even show us our own lack of humanity toward each other and the animal kingdom.
And when we talk about animals, we're not always just talking about cats and dogs or birds.
Absolutely.
We're talking about all of the animals, right?
Absolutely. This is the wild animals, the ocean animals, the little creepy crawly things that creep me out at times. But it's literally every animal that has a heartbeat, whether it has paws, feet, wings, fur, scales, whatever, but the animal kingdom as a whole, and then our pets also specifically for us.
And, you know, it's so important. You know, people will say, oh, I don't have to worry about the animals. They're all taken care of. Well, you know, I live in the land of, oh, I have to be careful how I word this, but I live in the land where putting things out into the air, putting things out into the ground, and putting out things into the water is common every single day. Stuff that shouldn't be there that is affecting animals as it is affecting humanity here. So, and we think nothing of it. They think it is so common. It's okay, you know, that chemical plant down the street, it spewed all this stuff. You know, it's okay. It was under the numbers, you know. Or it's okay that, you know, you dumped your ice chest and your septic tank stuff into the water because, hey, you know, it's almost like peeing in an ocean. It's not going to make any difference anyway, you know. But then you go down 2 or 3 miles and you're throwing your fishing line in there to catch supper. I just don't understand the concept of that sometimes. I really think either I'm too, I don't know. Some people tell me I'm crazy, but, you know, I understand the concept of that, but I guess maybe they don't.
Well, you know what I really think it is, because I'm like you as well. I think it's more a lack of consciousness, and people just, even though they appear to be awake, they're really walking through life asleep. And while we all awaken at different times, excuse me, I think that there are so many of us who are now fully awake that when we see these travesties, we just don't understand if we can see it, why others can't. And it can be just so frustrating. But then, you know, I have to stop and remember, too, everybody is doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing, whether they realize it or not. And then those of us who do understand just have to try a little harder, I think, to make a difference or undo it at times.
Yeah, and it seems, I think, as you said, we're in a point of awakening. But when we talk about the point of awakening, I'm not quite sure that the betterment part has come into play yet. In other words, we haven't outweighed it yet. I think we're all awakening. So we're like sitting there with, if you remember those dolls a long time ago in like the 50s and 60s with the big eyes, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they're just sitting
uh-huh.
there, you know. And I feel like that's in the point where we're at right now is everybody's just bug-eyed, but they're just there, you know. There may be a few, you know, percentage making the changes, but I think the majority are bug-eyed right now.
Well, I think that's true, and, the question is, how do we, you know, help them, support them? How do we awaken them? I mean, I know my process started back when I was in my 20s in college, and I didn't like it then because I felt like, well, I've got to be good and do right, and other people get to just do anything they want to do. But there is such a huge shift in consciousness now that my hope is that eventually we will all want to create a better earth and be willing to do what it takes. But the process is just so slow, it seems, at times.
And I think so, too, that a lot of people like to put it on the backs of other people. It doesn't matter what I do, so what? You know, someone else will come along and clean it up. I mean, after Hurricane Katrina, we saw a lot of that, you know. Someone will come and clean it up. Someone will come and fix it. Someone will do this, that, and the other. But then there was another group also that says, we're going to take it on ourselves, and we are going to clean it up. So there's a whole lot of diversity there. So, as you said, which way are the scales, you know, going right now?
I'm sorry. I was going to say, you know, we experienced in Birmingham a lot of the influx from Katrina, too. And I feel like, you know, it's up to us, instead of going with the status quo and saying, well, we can't make a difference. Well, you know, if you save an animal's life or if you help a person or a family in jeopardy, guess what? It means everything to that animal or that person. And that's got to become the prevailing philosophy, in my opinion, rather than the it just doesn't matter, what can one person do?
Right. You know, this is my randomness for this show. So my randomness is, I saw on Facebook the other day that someone had posted, they said, going to feed the homeless today. And it was like, are you number one, standing on your soapbox and you're looking for a pat on the back? And it just drove me crazy. And I said, you know, do you mean you're going to feed your neighbor? And it was like, oh, they were like, wow, you know? And mm-hmm. I think that is where we need to be, is can we go feed our neighbor? So can we help each other in equality rather than thinking that there are so many different levels?
Well, you know, I think that's true, and unfortunately, we are still a throwaway society. You know, if an animal
yeah.
gets in trouble or messes up your furniture, throw it away. You know, if your
right.
marriage isn't working, throw it away. And mm-hmm. we have got to really change that, you know. Again, I think it's individuals realizing that they are really more than an individual and taking whatever steps, how small or however large they can do, to make a difference in their world, and in meaning their immediate world of their community, and then wherever else they can expand that to. But, you know, I know many years ago when I had first moved to Birmingham and was teaching, and there was a big surplus of teachers, and so we, you know, weren't all able to get jobs at the same time, then I had friends who sometimes, like, paid my light bill or brought me supper and things like that to help me out. And I've never forgotten those days. So I try to do that and pay something ahead or forward whenever I can, whether it be for the animals or the humans.
Yeah, and I think that that's very important, that we just do it because we do. It's not because, you know, we have to put a label on anything or that we have to have something, just do it because we're looking for something back, don't you believe?
Absolutely, but you know, too, what I heard a few years ago, and I think about it at times, and I guess there is truth in it, but somebody had was discussing altruism, and they said, well, you know, there's really nothing altruistic because ultimately you're doing it for yourself to make yourself feel good or whatever. And so I've had to think about that off and on, and I don't really know how I feel, but I still like to try to do things because it's the right thing, but sometimes it makes me wonder, you know, is there anything ever just done for the sake of doing it? I think it's something to think about.
Yeah, I think that's true, absolutely. So, Trish, let's talk about the animals. How did you get started in this, and what is your current working with animals? I know you talk about having intuition with the animals and being able to understand them and to channel with the Blue Angel, and that seems like a mouthful. So wherever you'd like to start, feel free.
Oh, thank you. Well, my entire life has been filled with the animals. When I was a little girl, my mom raised poodle, shepherds, collies, and bloodhounds, and we never had cats, but we always had horses and dogs everywhere, so my life has been filled with the animals, and there was just always a connection to the animals that I never felt with the people. And I'm like William Faulkner, I can say paragraphs in one sentence, so feel free to interrupt if you need to.
But, no, go ahead.
You know, so my entire life has literally been filled with the animals, and when I was getting my PhD in college, I realized I just could not write, you know, 8 hours or 24 hours a day, and I saw actually where a local animal shelter behind my apartments had been vandalized, and I thought, you know, I can just go pet the cats, because they said, even if you just want to pet the cats, we can use help. And I did, and then I ended up running the thing, because that's just my nature. I don't ever start out just one thing. I tend to get really involved. And so then I realized later that, well, you know, I think I can create my own foundation, do it my way, and not have to go by anybody else's rules. And so I started Paws for Thought Animal Foundation. And not really knowing everything there was to know, I was just soon overrun with caring for the animals, you know, but it just created such a space in my heart. And so for now, you know, 40 years or more, I have always had multiple animals in my life. And when I moved to Birmingham, I transported my cats and my dogs here and continued my foundation. And then what happened is I have always been a writer my entire life, but I'd always wanted to write a book. And so I had met my publisher through a series of seminars, and she really inspired me. And my husband was going, you know, you say you're a writer, but you're not writing anything. And so I just started writing, and actually I started out with another concept. It was going to be an anthology. And then really what happened was, Dr. Jeanette, I thought about all of the animals from my whole life, and as I sat down and looked at them, literally I began to realize that there were specific and chronological lessons that had been with the death of almost every animal, or, you know, several animals in a row. And it emerged, the concept of the fur agreements. And I'm like, oh, my God, I never knew this. The book had literally been waiting there my whole life, and the lessons, but I didn't have the language to articulate it. And then all of a sudden, it just came out. And so the book is actually divinely channeled, and it shows my experiences with the animals, and then it shows the lessons and the steps we go through in loss, both when we lose a beloved animal or a beloved human. And that's how the book itself came to be written. It was through my experiences that literally just unveiled themselves to me in a huge act of consciousness.
You know, it is so interesting that you said that. You say you're a writer, but you haven't written. Do you know how long I've listened to that? I myself have heard that now for probably 30 years. Oh, goodness. But, you know, when we look back at it, I think is when we understand or see, as you said, what had occurred, rather than just taking it at face value and moving to the next moment. I think sometimes we don't even pay attention to the great gifts of the energy around us and the stories and the lessons, don't you think?
Well, absolutely. And really, that's where I believe, you know, the consciousness takes effect, because ever since The Secret came out, I have specifically, even though I must have been doing it my whole life, but again, I didn't have the title for it, but I have been working in consciousness, and I really believe that when we become conscious and we live from intention, then we have less of those moments where we're just oblivious to things and we just kind of move through the day, as you said, and we can be more open to recognizing those events, because I know now every time an animal gets sick or goes through anything, there's lessons there for them, for me also. And, you know, even the new technology and the new books that are coming out are talking about how the animals mirror what is going on inside us. And I'm like, finally, you know, people are really now starting to say that, and not being afraid of being judged or labeled, you know, anthropomorphic, that you're just all about the animals and you just think they have emotions. So I think it's a shift in consciousness.
You know, and I'm not an animal person, and I say that because I really feel like I'm connected to the people more than the animals, but I did notice that we do have a small puppy now, and, well, dog, but it was my daughter's, and she got it because she was in high school, you know, that whole teenage thing, oh, I need to have a dog kind of thing. And she got it right after Hurricane Katrina, and then now she's been gone to college and everything, and so the dog has pretty much been with me. And when I'm sick, the dog will never leave my feet. It's almost like I have to trip on her to keep going, to like if I'm going to the kitchen or something, because she will be so attached. And you know, you always hear stories of when people are ill or when they're at their end of their life, these long-loved pets are with the people just as much as the regular people are. And that's where the connection that people say, oh, that's the tightest connection I've ever had is to my pet. But really, it's all the same, right?
It is. People and pets. I think, like you say, you know, there are what we consider people, and then in animal people, but the love is the same, and the feelings, it's just the information and the understanding comes to us through different vehicles. For you, it's through humans. For me, it's through the animals. I learn all my lessons through the animals and then apply it back into my family. I remember that a little baby kitten I had gotten many years ago from a friend, a little Persian, Cognac Mesmerize. He developed a parvo cable shunt, a heart disease that nobody knew about, and in the middle of the night, in a tornado, I drove him, you know, to the emergency clinic, and he died in my arms. Well, do you know what happened was, is that for the first time in 10 years, I found through grieving him, I was able to grieve the death of my granddad that had died in 1983, but I could never express it. It only came out when Cognac died. So for me, that's how everything works. And then it's just exactly the same for others. You know, it's just reversed.
And I think to the listeners sometimes always have questions. They say they don't really understand how one event could bring feelings of something else. And I like to always reference, let's say if you're a person and you're saying, you know, I really want to be married. And I'll probe it further with them and I'll say, maybe what you're saying is you want to be loved. And they're like, no, I want to be married. What does married mean to you? It means love, caring, compassion, security, stability. So those are the things you're asking, but you're going about it into that other realm saying you want to be loved. So really that's more about how do you get those feelings. Those feelings is what you're looking for. And now when pets, they say, well, I want to have someone that I can walk, someone that I can sit with next to me, whatever it might be. But really what they're saying is I want to be loved too, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And to touch on what you mentioned a moment ago with your little dog that works with you when you're sick, you know, according to the way I believe and that it was given to me, the animals come into us with specific purposes, and I'd like to share them now because it speaks to that. But they come here to love, to heal, to teach, to inspire, to serve, and to protect. And so literally, you know, there are animals who are healing animals, and they can read your energy. That's why they won't leave you when you're feeling sick. There have been so many scientific studies now also showing where, you know, dogs can detect cancer years before the pets mm-hmm. could have done it, and they're studying it in mm-hmm. Florida. They learned about it, I think, from England first. There are stories where animals developed heart disease or cancer or whatever so that their humans wouldn't have to do it in times of great stress or divorce. So it's amazing what the animals can do for us, but it all does boil down to love, and I believe that the animals are the only form of unconditional love that is on the planet, because when we love, we always have a condition attached to it, even if we don't mean to or aren't conscious
right.
of it. Animals don't.
Right. Can you tell us a little bit about your channel work with animals? And then I had an email from someone that we can talk about perhaps their question about an animal
sure.
that had passed.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It runs in my family, and I'm clairsentient and an empath and claircognizant. And so I really receive information through my feelings, or I just know something and don't know how it came through to me. And so with the animals, what I do, I can actually do it either physically or long distance, but I sense and feel what they're feeling or what is going on inside of them. And I have had a healing ability all of my life, but I fought it for so long because I was interested in other things. And mm-hmm. literally only the past 10 years did I accept the healing ability. And so it's just a feeling that I get from people or the animals, and then I go into it and say a prayer, and then the healing is able to be affected, just like when Jesus did it. It's the only way I can liken it to, and I'm not saying I'm like Jesus, but I'm saying he told us all that we could do what he did, and you don't have to take a bunch of classes or things like that to be able to do it. You just have to believe that you can be a vehicle for help and change. And so that's what I do. I just think it, and then it comes through like that.
Interesting. So we have an email. I had a request from, actually it was a text, and my husband, he had asked about his last cat that had passed. He had several cats when we had Hurricane Katrina, and they all had died within, I think it was 3 or 4 months after the storm, and it seemed like, you know, almost all of those cats wanted to, it was time for them to go. It just, you know, a lot of them had feline leukemia all of a sudden, and they die very rapidly. And I think a lot of people's animals had passed away then. But he specifically wanted to know about his black cat named Susie. Mm-hmm. She was the last cat, and it was his closest. He really felt connected to that cat. And he was just wondering, any thoughts on that, on Susie? It devastated him when she died, but I think it probably...
Oh, I know.
Yeah, he didn't really have connection. He doesn't connect to people much. He connects more to animals. And mm-hmm. he really felt that when she passed, that was a blow to him.
Okay, yeah. First of all, what I'm just feeling right now is the energy, and I'm getting just an overwhelming sense of love for him. But here is the thing. It really was her time, because her purpose mm-hmm. had been completed, because she was able to help him to have that connection. And like you said, if he had not really had it or not in that depth with other animals, her purpose had truly been served, because his heart has now been opened. And even though they died in different ways and some of them went together, again, that's been one of the hardest lessons I've had to learn, is that literally when their purpose is complete, whether our purpose is not, and that often happens, then they go, and they don't always mm-hmm. go in the way we would want. But what I'm honestly feeling is that was her main purpose, was to open his heart and show him how to connect that way, and that's not something that she meant for him to ever lose again. And it doesn't mean he will have it with every animal, but he will know now and be able to recognize deep within himself when the next animal, the next kitty to come, will be able to have that kind of connection with him. And it's up to him now to be open and on the lookout for that. Does that make sense?
I think so. We have the dog now is Sophie, and she's just a crazy dog. But he really does attach to Sophie too. So,
well, you know, also, I believe anyway, maybe not everyone does, but that the animals reincarnate. And I have actually had 20 animals reincarnate back to me in my lifetime, one over and over, because he couldn't hold the energy physically in the body. But one of the things that I've learned is that they can also, the beloved animal that you lost can send you messages or signals, and you'll think, wait a minute, that's what Angel just used to do or whatever. So if mm-hmm. anything like that happens, you know, or if he feels like a reminder ever that something about his other kitty, then just know that that's literally her connecting with him and sending him a message that she's there. And I know he doesn't fully believe like we do, but he can always mm-hmm. also contact her in spirit. All he has to do is just talk to her from his heart, and she'll get the message, and she will respond back to him either like in a dream or, you know, a little way that he will know that she has been around him.
And, you know, it's really interesting, because sometimes Sophie will jump up on him and sit on his shoulders, and he's like, and I could tell, you know, that that's probably, you know, a symbolism, like you just said, mm-hmm. like the cat would have done, you know.
Absolutely. And they, you know, they can transmute bodies. So a dog may come back as a horse or a cat, or they may continue to come back in their exact body. I have had several who look exactly as they did, and I've had others come in a totally different body. So, but those mm-hmm. are just signals and messages that, you know, we are just so not accustomed to seeing beyond our normal line of vision. And when the puppy, you know, sits up on his shoulder, that's really an invitation to see a little differently, to see beyond the normal sight into that of spirit.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So maybe you can work with him that way a little bit.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's strange, because with our dog Sophie, I look at her and I have caught myself many times in the past few years saying, "Who are you?" and feeling like it's somebody reincarnated. I don't know why I keep saying that, but I never get the answer. But I do know I say that quite frequently.
Well, you know, that is something we could actually work with. It's hard to do something like that, you know, just on the air very quickly. But I will tell you, if you continue to get that feeling and it persists like that, there is something there, because everything does happen for a reason. So mm-hmm. if it's not someone you think it is or who you remember, there is still either information or a message trying to reach you, either from that person or, you know, and it's, again, I can't really feel into it at the moment, but I know it's one or the other. If it's not, then actually that person. But it's nothing like that happens, like, by accident. Or, you know, I've had many instances and heard of too, who they feel something jump on their bed, or they hear the paws on the wood floors, but, you know, there's nobody there. Those are things, literally, they're knocks on the door. They're trying to awaken our senses to that which is beyond our senses. And they're just as real. They're not like imagination or your grief. They are truly happening. And that I would love to be able to really impart to people and help them understand, you know, it is truly real. It's just not something you're dreaming up in your grief.
And it's not always something that you would expect. It could be something, in other words, me thinking that, it's not just, as you said, it's not just random. It has a purpose, to think that things do have purpose.
Absolutely. Nothing is by chance or random, I believe, that everything happens for a reason. We are just not taught as children to look for the reasons. We're taught mainly to be tangible with what we can see with our eyes and touch with our senses. And, you know, now I'm certainly much more of the belief that when you believe it, you will see it. And I think that that is so profound if you really think about it, because if you have the belief, then that's the foundation for everything else. And then you will be able to see, feel, experience much, much more. And did you want to hear about the Blue Angel, too? Because I did not mention her, but she is pretty profound. She has actually been identified now as the angel of the animals. And from my research, I have not been able to find a reference to her really pretty much anywhere else, even in the work of all the great angel specialists. And how she came to be revealed to me is that I had a cat that was going through a really traumatic death, and my mentor had called me and said, just see the Blue Angel and call her in and ask her to help you. And I'm like, well, who is that? And she's like, I don't know. I was just told to give you that message. And so I did, and within about 15 minutes, he was able to pass peacefully. So then I started trying to research it, could not find anything. And then as I began to meditate, and over a period of weeks, the information came in that there is an angel who is designed to really, and she initially started out working with just the animals who were dying, but over time she actually came to me and said, I'm here now to help all animals no matter what. They can just be having behavior problems, anything, but people can call on me to help with the angels. And so what ended up happening was she would channel to me a series of prayers on healing, on whatever. And so now we introduced her in my book, and I'm actually putting together the handbook of healing for the Blue Angel. And so people often will call me and say, my dog or my cat's going through this, will you do a prayer? And then I do that. But everyone can actually access her. You just have to call on her and ask her to come help whatever is happening. But she's very powerful and just very, very wonderful, and such a wonderful help when your heart is breaking at those really dark times.
You know, I had, as I said, I work with humans. Had a client call me, I think it was about 2 years ago, maybe, or three. And she said, I know you really don't help with animals, but let me tell you a story. And she told me about her, a dog that she had, and she said, what can we do? So probably for about 3 or 4 months, we went through the things that she wanted to do, and she would tell me symptoms, and I would say, okay, let's think about this, and all these different things. So she wanted to feel that she could change and heal this dog, it's in my belief. And she wanted to feel that she could get all of these things and do all of these things, like Epsom salt baths and homeopathy and herb stuff and good food and All of these things she felt were powerful, and she wanted to be able to do them because she was going to heal this dog. Well, we did that for about 3 or 4 months, and it came down towards the end. And I think it was more of the process of her learning about end of life and grieving and letting go and feeling what she was out of control in. And we would just keep going through. And then when it got to the end, she says, I can't control it anymore. I said, okay, now we need to make sure he's comfortable. We need to make sure that he's ready to go and that you give him, you know, all the care and love. So go in there and talk to him, lay down next to him and talk to him and say all the things that you think. So then she called me back the next day. She had done that. And we went through the process. She was angry. I said, okay, so go outside by the tree, and I want you to kick the heck out of the tree. You know, get all of your frustration out in the tree, and then I want you to go back and sit with the dog again. She did that. Then we went to the next day. And she said, oh, he just looks so forlorn. He just looks into my eyes, and I'm just looking at him, and I just had to tell him. And I said, okay, now you need to tell him he's okay to go. And she did that for a whole day. And then she would always be watching him and over him and hovering. I says, you need to go out. You need to go out and you need to go somewhere else for about 2 or 3 hours because he wants to go, but he won't do it with you hovering. Mm-hmm. And don't you know, after she had gone and came back, he went.
Absolutely. And
that's so important to honor that part and to realize that with animals is that it's just as well with humans. How many times do you hear people say, you know, my grandmother, oh, my gosh, I'm not going to, or my husband, I'm not going to leave the hospital because they're going to die, but I got to go home and get a shower. You go home and you're no sooner hit that shower and they have passed. So we need to realize that that's the same process, right?
It is, absolutely, and you touched on several profound points. You know, first of all, and again with the humans as well, but animals can act both as the messengers and as the lessons that we need to learn. And while our love or their love for us can be so powerful that they stay long past their time. I had a cat, my Ebony, who was just literally yanked away from me, even though I was told he was okay, and I went off for the first time for a weekend with my college roommate, came home. He had passed moments before. But the thing is, in the healing, we have to stop because this is their journey. We're on a parallel but secondary journey with them, and we can't ask for them to be healed because we want to heal them. We have to ask for them to be healed as it's in their contract, you know, as what's right for them. And then when they are passing or in those end stages, we have to be willing to do whatever they want. If they want, as you said, to be left alone, doesn't mean they don't love us, but it means they don't want our last memory to be of their last moment. For me, right. I normally am allowed to feel the last heartbeat or the last breath, but there have been several times I haven't been allowed that, and it killed me because I want to do that, but it's not about me. So it's just really important to honor what is right for them. And also, more than anything, just because someone is getting sick, don't assume it's time to put them down, because they will let you know. Absolutely, they will let you know when it's time. But, you know, often people rush to go ahead and put them down because they don't want to, they want to spare the animal or they want to spare themselves. And truly, it's ultimately a beautiful process. We just don't know how to see it yet because it hurts us. And that's one of the big lessons of the fur agreements, is to understand that they're only on loan to us for a while and that they're truly being called home. And if we can understand how to look at them and not let it be a death watch and to just live your life but live it consciously with them, then that's the main lesson.
Yeah, and so many people just cannot be conscious of that. They still want to control situations. I mean, we always see this as humans too, you know. People will call me saying, you're an alternative medicine doctor. Well, you know, my regular doctor said he can't fix me, and I've got 6 months, so I need you to save me by your miracles. And it's like, I don't think so, you know. I can help you prepare for what, you know, your life is. But we can't save anybody. That's not our purpose on this earth, is to save people or thing, you know, other animals or anything. We're just doing the best we can. There is, you know, this other energy that when it is your time, it's your time.
Absolutely. And one thing I would really like to mention to your listeners, just for their consideration, because, it, you know, we see it every day, and there's so much heartache with it that I just want to offer an idea for them. But when we see the things like the animals at the slaughterhouses, or the baby seals, or the dolphins in the cove, or the dog fights, you know, when we see the horrific things, it was channeled to me that literally these animals all came in with those purposes to go through those experiences and to be able to act in those instances as the message and as the lessons for us. They knew what was going to happen, and they volunteered. They took on that assignment because they wanted to be able to help people learn to find or see better ways. And for some people, it means to go protest. In other people, it means to be more conscious and aware. But the animals don't die in vain, ever, and that was their mission and their purpose. And I just want to put that out there into their consciousness to ponder on a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that everything has a purpose. People say, well, why are there so many, let's use just the label of, why are there so many people that don't have homes or don't have enough food, and they're living out in the out, you know, in nature? And we say, well, they have to have a house, they have to have clothes, they need to have this, they need to have that. And that may just not be on their list of what they have to have. And yet we think that our conditions or our labels is where everybody needs to be. And that is true, you know. We should look at everything around us and learn from that. It's not about us trying to put everybody on the same level, though. Same thing with animals. It's not everybody needs to be on the same level, right?
Absolutely. And the thing is, I do believe that we are all responsible for everything that comes into our lives, and that we bring it to us. We either attract it directly or indirectly, and we sign up for it. It's just when we realize we signed up for it, we can do something with the situations and conditions. But again, the babies that are born with terrible birth defects or whatever, those are some of our greatest teachers at times in helping us find our own levels of humanity and how to be. Even when you see something on TV like a documentary about the animals or an eagle up in the sky, that didn't just happen. You know, there was a message there somewhere, and that's the thing. It doesn't have to be your direct touching experience. The messages and the understandings can come from everywhere, because it is our world.
So, Dr. Trish, can you tell us about your book? Because your book is very unique in how it's written. You have a lot of prayers in here. You have a lot of questions at the end of every chapter. You really probe into looking at life. I mean, you're looking at all humanity, you know, humans and animals, and you tie it all together. Can you tell us about the book and how the listeners could find out more about purchasing this book?
Absolutely. Well, again, as you said, the book is called The Fur Agreements, and it's a play on the Four Agreements, and it is on Amazon and Kindle. I also have digital versions available that people, if they prefer to read on the computer, can purchase directly from me. And you can go to www.thefuragreements.com. That will lead them directly to my foundation, which is Pause for Thought Animal Foundation, and it will have the links where you can purchase the book from Amazon. And the book is really two major sets of messages. The first are the actual fur agreements, the messages that the animals bring to us for what they're here to do in our lives. And then secondly, there are the agreements that we also make back to them. And so hence the name, the fur agreements. And then secondly, the underlying part of the book are messages about loss and how to live through it, about healing, about detachment, but literally woven through stories of my own animals or other friends and clients' animals that really teach us specific lessons, such as the fact that there are degrees and layers of love. If you've ever wondered why you're more attached or connected to one animal than another, it goes into that and helps us understand that literally every animal and every person in your life has their own spot in your heart that can never be taken away or diminished. But there are times we're going to feel more connected to one animal or two animals or a certain person over others, and there's no wrong in that. There's no guilt. It's just how it's meant to be. And so those are the major lessons. But if you've ever had trouble on losing an animal or going through the process of a long-term illness, this is the book for you because it explains why it's happening and how to learn to celebrate their lives as opposed to only grieve it, and how to thrive later after they have left.
Yes, because I think it's important to try to recognize what your animal and your pet have given to you. And like you said, go forward, because they didn't mean for you to suffer in their loss either. And I think that's the same for humans as it is for pets and animals, because, you know, when someone passes on, you know, the other person wasn't meant to sit back and be grieving and be in suffering all of the time. They still have a life to live, and it's still important to recognize that.
Absolutely, and that is actually why the questions, there are, as you said, questions at the end of every chapter, mm-hmm. because I recognize that some people just want to have a pet and love it, and there's nothing wrong in that, but you can still have a more meaningful relationship with your pet. Now, if you're like you and me and you want to go as deep as you can, the questions also and everything in the book will help you get there as well. So you can approach it from either level, from more of mainstream America or from more of a mystical standpoint, but you can really learn more just how to have a deeper relationship, and you can learn how to do the prayers. You can contact me for support. I work with people all over the world. So it really shows you, and there are several free gifts in the book, too, when you buy it that you have access to, which is like another even deeper journal and a beautiful anthem of the animals, which was composed, and it's music generated from the souls of all the animal kingdom, so by Dr. Will Tuttle. And so it's just, if you've got a heart for the animals, I truly believe it's a book worth reading through at least once.
So in closing, we have about 6 or 7 more minutes. I was wondering if you might be able to share your thoughts, and this is a little bit out of the realm, but it is a topic that a lot of people are thinking about these days, is everybody's going to a plant-based diet now and feeling like they're more honoring the animals. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because that comes up in almost every seminar that I do. And I will tell you that one of my main mentors was Patrick Quirk, who was the last of the Anasazi Pueblo shaman. But yet by day he was a rocket scientist at NASA. And so he really helped me understand this aspect. And again, it is individual choice, but the Native Americans have always eaten meat. They've used every part of an animal, and even today, many of them still do. So while, yes, on one hand, you know, there are people who want to say, well, if you really loved animals, you know, you wouldn't wear leather or fur, or you wouldn't eat them. Again, based on the premise that every animal comes in with a specific purpose, I honestly believe that if you choose to eat meat, that that is fine, because if you can recognize it and just appreciate it and honor it, then you're doing what you're meant to do. I don't believe personally that the world has to go to plants to show an an honoring of the animals. Some people do. I eat meat. I don't eat as much as I used to, but I do eat it. And I don't think the animals are here to teach us that there is just a prescriptive no, no, no. I think they're here to teach us how to do what we do in the best way possible, consciously, whatever that is. And then the same for humanity. And I'm not trying to sit on the fence about that, but that's just my true belief. I think it's okay to do whatever you're called to do, but don't try to force it on other people. And I don't try to force what I think on them. I just offer it as an invitation to think about.
You know, I have a nephew who has a farm in Massachusetts, and all of the animals are out on tons of land. They eat everything, you know, that's organic. In other words, they just eat, they're just grazing like they should be. And then he sells the meat, you know, every summer. And that's the purpose. He's a farmer. He has, you know, he has meat and he has plants. And he always says that this is the purpose of life. That is what it was in that area. That is what they did. He's on, you know, Native American type, in other words, very ancient land. And that's what he does, and he feels that he's blessed to do it. And that's a whole lot different than the realm that we think of is some of the factory farms and everything that are, you know, in some of the other states and the areas. So I think making a conscious decision, just like people are about, well, I'm not going to get my fruits and vegetables from this certain store, I'm going to go more organic, and then those other ones will not have a market. I think people making choices on meat also of saying, I'm going to go to the more humane of how it should be versus going to how I'm not liking it should be, you know? And I think that's a conscious choice, because then those other ones will eventually dissipate.
Yes, and, you know, I have found, because I always work on judgment, that every time I want to make somebody wrong, then there's no way for them to come to my point of view if I try to do that. And the animals are never about making somebody be wrong. So, again, if we can just offer our ideas and values as an invitation to think about this and see how it feels and resonates with you, to me, I found that's the best way to go, because if you're not made to feel wrong, your mind is more open and able to entertain new ideas. So that's how I try to live. I'm not always successful, but I try to remember my way is not the only way.
Yeah, and that does make a big difference, you know. And if you make your choices and, you know, you're doing the best that you can at this time too, you know, generations learn lessons, you know, each time. So if we were to learn all the lessons and be perfect right now, I mean, it'd probably be the end of everything. But so in other words, we're not just going to learn our lesson for today and the world is going to be hunky-dory, you know, cotton candy and roses. You know, we're going to go on to the next lesson. And that's important to remember, is that our lessons are never over. Our life is never over. That is the purpose of life.
Absolutely, and you're totally right, because when we have achieved everything, then you would ascend, and I don't know anybody that has actually done that, but the purpose is to learn the lessons, to become better, more whole, to find wholeness, and to make a better world for all of us. And again, I believe to see the brotherhood of everything, the cosmic consciousness. You know, none of us are an island existing just by ourselves and what we think, feel, and believe. You know, we're all connected in one way or another.
And, you know, I think that it's also important, too, to remember that there's not always gurus. Gurus are just people who want to stand up and you know, have their own dogma, you know, because everybody is here to learn lessons and different lessons. It's not everybody having to learn the same. So if you're just, you know, really here just to learn to love and care, that's the same. But you could be at different levels of that at different times in your life.
Well, absolutely, and the fact that, you know, there are master teachers and things. I've always had wonderful mentors, but actually we're all our own master teacher. We've just never been taught to realize it, and when we do, we learn. We've got that direct link to God. We don't need an intercessor or whatever, but again, sometimes the learning of that may be what takes our life's journey, and then whatever help we can get along the way helps push us that much closer. But we all have all of the knowledge we ever need directly within us if we can learn how to just tap into it. So, and I learned that through the animals, and I'm so grateful for that.
Well, it was such a pleasure to have you with us today, and we've made it through the show, and I just hope that it will be a quieter weather day. I hope in your area everybody remains safe.
Oh, thank you. And if your listeners ever have any questions, feel free to let me know. And, you know, love to try to be of any support I can to you and your listeners. And I thank you for this opportunity to talk about life and the fur agreements. And I hope y'all have good weather, too.
And also, what is your website so the listeners will be able to check it out?
Oh, okay. Well, if they just go to thefuragreements.com, that will take them into my full website. The name is so long, it's just easier to use, www.thefuragreements.com. And then that goes into Pause for Thought, which is my animal foundation and tells you all the projects and things that we work on.
Well, it was a pleasure to have you with us today. Thank you so much.
You have a blessed day, and I wish your husband well with his learnings about his kitty cat.
Yes, I'll have to contact you back and find out who this my dog is.
We will do that. No problem.
We will.
Y'all have a blessed day. Thank you so
much. Thank you so much for being with us. If you'd like more information about Dr. Trish working, her book is The Fur Agreements, and the website is www.thefuragreements.com. Please do check it out. Dr. Trish is available to work via telephone or Skype or in person in your area. Please do contact her on her website, and she'll be able to give you more information about how she does work with animals. I know if you are having an issue with your animal and you're finding that your pet may be at the end of life or you've recently lost a pet, Dr. Trish is available to help you move through that. Please do contact her. She is a lovely soul, and she's just great with animals. So thank you so much for being with us today, and I hope that everyone is having a safe day, weather day, and we will quickly move into May where there'll be a lot less storms on the horizon. Thank you so much for being with us. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and have a great day.